This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 823, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you who are still being cautious, easing back in, but also being safe.
Who aren't slapping anyone. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Stand a little taller. Doesn't mean I'm lonely when I'm alone. What doesn't kill you makes a fighter. What's that even lighter? Doesn't mean I'm over. Cause you're
Hello, welcome to my Fanboy Pick of the Week, episode 823. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and this is my co-host, Josh Flanagan.
That would be me. That's
and
correct.
And that's it. No one else this week.
It's just us.
Contain your excitement and or disappointment.
One way or the other. Choose your emotion and go with it based on that objective information.
We are a fanboy. Every week we read some comics, and the thing is we have to pick a best one. That's how the show works. No matter what the week brings us, there's got to be a best. We call that the pick of the week. We'll talk about that book, other books from the week, the patron pick, listener mail, all the while the world continues to burn. And so for 1 hour a week, Josh and I get to forget about all that and talk about comics, and hopefully you do as well. But that's how this works. Here's your spoiler warning. This is a review show. There'll be some spoilers. This week, Josh, you had the pick.
Yes, I did. I hate to do this. I do. And I think that it is notable that the last couple few weeks, I think we were like, these are great comics, and it was super fun.
Yeah.
And this week, and again, I'll say, not bad books. Just like, I'm going to struggle to say anything about all of these. And I wrote to you at one point, and I was like, I don't know what the pick is. And you were like, yeah, I hear you, buddy.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't have like a bad week. It was just like everything was fine.
You know, it's a lot of the books that we read and we've talked about, and so we have to think about it in terms of, we don't just come here and say, oh, this was good. You know, there has to be something to think about it. And all the books we've read before were either fine or actually some were actually a little disappointing. And I hate that we have to lead with that, but I gotta say I had a hard time finding anything that really stood out. So that said, apologies to Jim Rugg. in a way, the pick of the week is Hulk Grand Design Monster Number 1.
Yeah.
This is in the pattern of the X-Men and I think Fantastic Four Grand Design done by Ed Piskor.
Well, Ed Piskor did one and then Scioli did the other one.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you're right. Jim Rugg and Ed Piskor do a podcast together, I think, which I cannot remember the name of right now. I'm aware of it, but I'm bad with remembering details of things, so there we are. Basically, what we're doing here is we're getting a fast-paced comic book retelling of the Hulk from his first appearance to, I think it went to 84, if I read the notes correctly. And there's two things. I mean, you can't really judge this on the same merits as other comics where you're like, this was a great story, because it isn't that. It's a retrospective. It's a montage. It's an overview. And so, you know, the skill in it, the enjoyment in it comes from the construction, the craft of like, how did you do all this? How did you synthesize all this? We saw Mark Waid do this with A History of the Marvel Universe with, who's the artist?
Javier Rodriguez.
Yes. You know, and that was really impressive and huge. And I think the same thing with, you know, the Piscor one is that, especially with the X-Men, that's my worst one. Actually, I think they chose the three best ones to sort of go with the overall history, which is X-Men, which I find entirely confusing and convoluted. And then Fantastic Four, which is just so epic and huge. And then Hulk, which is lesser to me. I don't know it as well. But this was kind of a fun overview of everything that's happened to the Hulk from the beginning. And it's really cool to step back and take this sort of like satellite view of everything that, you know, the Golden Age of Marvel did.
Yeah.
I know that's not the right term in terms of, you know, the age. But the Lee and Kirby, the heyday of like, we're creating these worlds from whole cloth. And this is a really good vehicle to get an understanding and just like, shore up your, you know, expertise and be able to connect the dots on the things that happen today where, you know, like, I don't know the story of the leader. I kind of am vaguely aware of how Doc Samson worked and how Abomination, these are just characters I know who exist. And then also how they used to handle the different Hulks, because the Hulk is always sort of malleable. Sometimes he's the raging toddler. Right. Sometimes he's super intelligent. And I actually had no idea about this Jarella character who was his blonde-haired Hulk love.
That's the thing. I do want to preface by saying I really love this issue. We talked about, you know, just a minute ago how it was a weird week. The problem is it's the same love that I've had for all these Grand Design books. So yeah. It's not new love, but I had a blast reading this because these books do a terrific job of laying out how bonkers comics are. And when you you lay out a single character story page to page, panel to panel like this, it's just like Hulk dies, Hulk's resurrected, Hulk loses his power, he gets gamma rayed again. Like, it's every 5 minutes something crazy is happening, and the pacing of it was very funny. And also, like you said, you learn a lot. Like, I didn't know about her either, but his great Hulk love, who was also some sort of Hulk, and I felt bad when she died.
It's crazy that this character hasn't been resurrected in recent times. Like, that's crazy. I think that's going to happen soon. That's my guess reading this. I think what's really fun about this is that it leans into what is great about comics in the Morrisonian sense. Look at that. Write that down. Write that down. You know, in that it finds strength in the fact that, like, Jarella and Hulk were both killed and resurrected, and the leader, at one point the leader comes back, and then they were like, he died, then he came back. Like, doesn't matter why, doesn't matter how. The leader came back because they needed the leader in this story, and it's fun, but also it does create like this through line, because someone somewhere was trying to make sense of this, you know. And this just lays it out all there, and you can kind of just get this really interesting condensed outline of sort of comic book creation through eras. I mean, if you're talking about, what was Hulk 1, 63 64, you know, through this is 84, you know, incredible.
First 20 years,
change. That 20 years, though, spanned a lot of space. I think that 20 years spanned more space than the 20 years after it.
Hulk was 62, so just like just over 20 years.
Right. Just like seeing like how society changes come into it, how the art changes. One of the best things that Jim Rugg does in here is that he's amazing at changing up the style, or at least evoking a different style. And so you have a bit where there's a fabulous Freak Brothers, you know, like underground comics with an X, you know, hippie thing in there from that time. And there's covers that have been recreated, just straight up recreated from that time period, which gives you context and place you in a place. There's another bit where you turn the page and you see the 70s animated Hulk, you know.
Right.
Or is it 70s or 80s? I think it's 70s. You know, and just these different versions, and it moves along as you're going. And I really like, there's a bit in the story, it is a story. There's a bit in the story where the Hulk is outlawed because he's destroyed places and the government wants to hunt him down, and then he does something good. So basically at one point, like Jimmy Carter, President Jimmy Carter, you know, goes on as like, we can promise this will never happen again, this kind of destruction. And then later he gets pardoned because he does a service. And I just think that's fun. In that context of everything.
Yeah, it's a real fast-paced way of telling this character's history that is incredibly... I just love the panel-to-panel transitions where it's like Hulk battled Daredevil. The next panel is Doctor's hopeful for DD. He's in the hospital. You know, it's like it's a lot of comic transitions from panel to panel. I didn't know how often the Hulk had been cured.
Yeah.
It was probably like 20 times. So like the Hulk as we know it is no longer the Hulk of the original Gamma explosion.
He's been de-gametized and re-gametized so many different
ways. That's
a good point. I found that really interesting. Cause I, you know, I loved the Hulk as a kid, but I didn't start reading him until, you know, when this book ends in 84, we're only like 7 years old. And that's probably around when I was reading more comics. So I didn't really read these old Hulk comics.
Yeah.
I didn't know Doc Samson's origin. There's just a lot of things I didn't know that was fun to read. I think this is great. I do think this is a brilliant idea, whoever came up with this Grand Design Comics.
It's very related to Piscor's History of Hip-Hop books. I feel like that's got to be the genesis of this, because it's sort of that. I mean, I think one of the great things is at the end, you have this bibliography, sort of, and it tells you what everything is and where it comes from. But it's actually done in such a way that it is not tedious to read through. And I know that that doesn't seem like a thing, but you don't necessarily want to read a, what is it, how many pages? 45-page comic, 43, you know, and then afterwards have a bunch of text edits to go to. But it's a really good reference to say, oh, well, this part was kind of crazy. When was this? Right. And it's just done well.
Yeah. If you want to read it, now you can.
Yeah. And it just, it's a good reference. It's only two pages. It's not like, it's not like the From Hell appendix, which is legendary.
I love that appendix.
I know you do, but it's still, it's daunting. It's like, oh, I finished the book. Oh, no, there's another book here.
I read it concurrently. That's how I did it. But there's also just terrific single page issues. Single pages. Single page images of Hulk. You know, there's like the one where all of Hulk's enemies, and it's done like sticker style, where the enemies are all stickers over an image of Hulk. And the one you mentioned before of the animated TV version. And then there's another one later on I'm looking at. I just skipped past it. Where it's like Hulk fighting all these different people. There's just some terrific art in this where he changes how
it's
colored. And that's
Jim Rugg's real strength, I think, is that he can play around with the genres. And it's not impression. He's not like recreating things. He can do that. That Marvel's TV sensation, you know, Hulk page literally looks like it could be right out of that era. The first time we were really into him was he did the Aphrodisiac book, which is our book of the year. In 2010, it was the year my son was born. I remember that because I read that around the time he was born. He can evoke a different time and place through his comic book art, apparently fairly effortlessly. There's a piece in here where it's the comic strip, and it literally looks like it's been cut out of the paper. He does the thing where the pages are all appropriately aged, given the time period of where it is. So the animated stuff is all bright and green, and then as you get back, there's comic book ad kind of things in there, and it all changes around. It is a tour de force in terms of the skills and mechanics of comic book art and design. It's grand design.
I think these are fun.
Yeah, and in a way also that it evokes the artist. The artist isn't buried in there. The artist isn't doing an Ed Piskor. The artist is doing Jim Rugg, doing these other people. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Which now I feel shitty that I didn't read the Tom Scioli one, because I bet that that's freaking amazing now that
I'm
enjoying this. Yeah, it's just there's a lot going on, and the more you look through it, the more there is to appreciate. However, I really think that this is a comic nerd historian kind of thing. I don't know, but I feel like if you handed this to somebody who never read comics, that there's just too much. There's too much to get.
I don't know if that's true. I know that my wife put the X-Men one in her classroom, and that the kids enjoyed that, learning about the characters.
Yeah,
it's a manic history, and I think if you're into the characters, it's fun to learn about them.
Let me put it this way. I think that Piskor obviously had done those hip-hop books, five of them, I think. And, like, those were completely accessible to everybody. I'd have to look at the books again. But I do know that in here are a lot of, Easter eggs isn't the word, but nods, subtle nods to very specific things that comic books did during those times. So I don't think it would throw anybody off, but I think if you sort of know your history and you are interested in, you know, the forms of comic books, there's a lot extra in here the more you go through it, you know, if you're a student of the history of the books, I guess.
I think it's interesting though who they've done this with. I mean, the X-Men was an obvious choice because of the insane soap opera nature of that book. Fantastic Four, Scioli is a, I don't want to say he's a Kirby guy.
I think he's on
guy,
that show quite often, too.
He's a student of Kirby, and it's such a foundational book for Marvel. I think Hulk is a fascinating third choice. You know, it's like you would assume they do like Spider-Man, but it's interesting, and I think it's been great because it's not the obvious one.
Yeah. I also think that he's a little more shrouded in mystery. Hulk is a little bit Wonder Woman of the Marvel Universe to a certain extent. I think people have had a really hard time.
We're going to talk about this later in the show. It's like
Yeah.
Hulk was sort of, I don't want to say done and finished by Peter David, but he did such a long run that encompassed so much about the character that it's almost impossible to do anything with him since. And that was a long time ago.
But I really think, like, there hasn't been much of a mark made on him. Red Hulk and World War Hulk are probably the two.
Yeah.
But even those, yeah. Every time somebody comes along with a new Hulk thing, it's like a completely, it's not a continuation of the story. It's a completely different Hulk. That whole Immortal Hulk thing was a whole different take on it. What's happening in the series now, and we'll mention this later, you know, is a whole different take on it. Yeah. They all exist independent of each other. And I think you're right. It might be that Peter David finished the Hulk.
We'll get to that in a minute. Let's talk about Dark Ages, number 6, the final issue of the Tom Taylor, Iban Coelho, Brian Reber, and Joe Sabino Elseworlds miniseries about a future in the Marvel Universe in which an EMP blast from a creature has darkened the world and everyone's trying to survive. I really enjoyed this, but I still couldn't shake the idea that I was sort of reading an outline.
You said that, I think last time you were like, well, yeah, this is only 6. And I was like, oh no. And this issue for me, that really came true, because this was, it felt like the movie ended and now we're watching somebody tell us the recap part at the end instead of the last action-packed issue. And I thought, wow, we really got shortchanged of issues here. And I don't necessarily blame the creative team. They probably had, but this seems to only happen when you get cut short of issues more than you meant to. You know what I'm saying?
I don't know. I mean, 6 makes sense for, like, you know, a plan, but this feels like if you're going to do this sort of deep dive with all of these characters, you need like a 12.
Do you remember how sort of slow rolling out the first couple issues were?
Yes.
Like, we had to take a while to get our feet. So that makes me think that they got the rug pulled out from under them at some point. I don't know, but if they knew they had 6 and planned it this way, then that is an error.
Right. What you lose here is the connective tissue and the details that make the story great.
In the moments.
There's great scenes in here, and I like the idea, yes, of Miles Morales was Venom for a while. That's an interesting way to take his character. But we only see a glimpse of that, you know. There's not enough time to spend with anyone, really, because we only have 6 issues to introduce this world, the problem, the villain, the twist. Now there's a time jump, we're in the future. Some people are in Europe, some are in America. There's a new society. Like, there's a lot of things to explain. And when Tom Taylor did that with Deceased, he had several 8-issue miniseries in which to flesh out the world. Here, it's crammed into 6 issues, and it feels like it's really rushed.
And the digital extras, like, there was, I mean, this is one of those things where, I don't know if this is a good example of Marvel versus DC and how they approach things, you know, because Marvel's like, bam, 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 you know, and then DC's like, well, let's put some things around this and let this other thing breathe. And I think, for whatever reason, it felt hamstrung by the format. Not enough issues. Like, the things didn't get to pay off in a character sense, which were the bread and butter of Deceased and of Injustice.
Yeah.
The character moments, you know, when, like, you spend a lot of time with Green Arrow and Mockingbird. No, every time. Green Arrow,
every
Black Canary. And the birds, they look exactly the same.
It's the same thing. The same two characters.
They're two archers. I mean, it's...
It's the same.
When you really look into it, they're identical. This isn't my fault. Anyway, you know, you spent a lot of time with them. I remember they were camping with Green Lantern at one point. And so when he turns, is it him? Yeah. When Green Arrow turns, it is deadly. And then you have time to live with them with that.
Yeah.
Look at the best things that Tom Taylor has done, and it's long form. It's not 6 issues. It's like telling Pink Floyd to do a pop song. It ain't right.
This was a good story. It's just, I felt like this was an outline of a good story. Like, things happened here that were really fun. And I laughed a couple of times. I thought the sequence where Deadpool kills Kilgrave was funny.
Yes, it was.
That wasn't the plan. I was driving the bus. No one told me the plan was funny.
But that's the thing. Like, so we didn't get much time with any of these people. And again, in Deceased, like, the side thing, you know, we got to spend a lot of time with John Constantine. And there was that bit about them all being in the school with the kids. And, you know... We get to be in this world. This is a rad world. They arrive in London, and they have the Devil Dinosaur strapped to the top of a bus that has been fitted with a steam engine on the back. I'm sorry, right. Paris.
Yeah.
They must have driven it from London, and he has a Deadpool thing. Like, there's so many cool things here, and we're in Paris for 8 pages.
This feels like it's Dark Ages, the treatment. Like, this is the treatment you hand in before they greenlight the script.
You know what this is? This is the movie, which doesn't have time to live in these, right? Like, they keep moving all the time. Whereas, you know, the TV series would be.
If that's the case, then if you only have 6 issues and this is it, then I think you needed to cut down how many characters there were.
Yep. Yeah.
But I get it. He's a DC guy. He's playing in the Marvel Universe, and he is going to write everybody. I get it.
The Kilgrave thing, that page, that's a great page turn, by the way, because everything, the Sturm und Drang is all kicking up, and everything's, you know, and all of a sudden, boom, it's over. All the air is let out of the scene. Not in a bad way, in a good way. But that page, what I thought was, oh, wow, Ryan Ottley is an influential artist. Because this is terrible, I know, is that, like, to Ryan Ottley, I was like, oh, he's one of those new guys. He's not, though. Like, he's been around long enough that he's influencing people that come after him, because that's a Ryan Ottley panel. 100%.
Yeah.
It's cool. I just love that. Like, he's kind of a statesman at this point, and I just don't picture it that way.
So, yeah, I think, I mean, look, it's a fun little Elseworlds story set in the Marvel Universe. It just felt like it was a treatment-level version of it.
I just felt like it shortchanged. I felt like they left a lot on the floor, and the pacing changed on me. So I wanted to really live in this finale, and I felt like, wait, where's the finale? Oh, it's over.
I understand, you know, it's not Marvel's bread and butter to do alternate versions of their characters. You know, they don't usually do that, so maybe they weren't sure what would happen and only gave them six. But
yeah, fair enough.
It was tough. So Astro City returned this week with Astro City That Was Then. So what happened was, we had a bunch of Astro City books sometime in the past. That's not my go-to. I don't know, sometime in the past there was the last volume of Astro City.
Was it Vertigo? And it was there a long time,
and then it ended, and Busick and Anderson and Ross said, we're going to do these as graphic novels going forward, OGNs. Then many years passed, and now we're back with comics again out of Image, where Astro City originated all 30 years ago, or however many years ago it was. In the essay at the back, he was like, yeah, the graphic novel thing didn't work out. So now we're back to issues.
Kurt Busiek, by the way, is the...
Snake bit.
He's not the inventor. Yes, he's that too. But he's the, like, he has long time been about the expository essay in the back about how things are coming. And I am annoyed by it with everybody else. But with him, it is a feature. It is part of it. And he's, you know, because he's always like, yeah, I lost a finger. Everyone in the family died. They burned down the Midwest. Like, it's,
right.
He really is a cursed person. What's interesting, too, is that throughout the Vertigo days, and there was a lot of issues, and they came out very regularly, which is unusual for, but Jesus Marino drew most of it. Brent Anderson didn't do most of it. And this was Brent Anderson back doing, I thought, great work.
Yeah.
He's getting on, I understand. And it was a challenge for him, but I thought that his work was pretty strong here. All that said, I did not think this was a great Astro City story.
I mean, I like the idea of it. It's sort of the Teen Titans of the Astro City world going on a cross-country road trip because a bunch of the other members got killed. And they're all at a transition point in their lives where they're not really kids anymore. They're like 18 and they're going to be becoming adults. And what does that mean? So I like the idea of it. You know, it's tough because these are not characters we've seen before. At least I don't remember seeing them before, maybe in the background. Maybe here and
there. That's not unusual. That's what they do all the time. But for some reason, like, this one didn't grab me. There's a bit where they're going back and forth, and I thought, wait, are these the same characters they're talking about, but they've adopted new? And I just wasn't sure. Because it throws you in. There's not a lot of setup, I guess.
And there's ghosts of the ones who died, and they're still around at the end watching Samaritan. He says, you know, this is kicking off his next volume of this, so they're going to be, I guess, important characters for that, but... I liked reading it. I didn't love the issue.
That Vertigo run was extremely strong, and I think that we were really high on it at the time. And I just thought, you know, it's important to talk about. There's downtimes in this. You know, the Dark Ages wasn't great.
Yeah.
That was a series they did at some point. It was either Wildstorm or Image or whatever. You know, and it can come and go, but it's so massive and sprawling. Released at the same time this week was a 500-page compendium of whatever the first 500 pages of it were.
Right.
You know, and in there are a lot of really great stories. There's probably some that aren't wonderful because it's so wide-ranging. But the fact is, this has been going on for nearly 30 years, and it kind of looks the same.
1995.
Yeah, so 27 years.
Yeah.
And it still feels new to me, you know, but, you know, it's okay. Like, this is, okay, this album wasn't great. This next one will be good. Mm-hmm. You know, not mad at it, but I was a little like, I wish I could have been like, oh, this was pick of the week. It was awesome to see them come back, you know, roaring, you know, but it was a very low-key story too.
I'm just laughing at in the essay where he's talking about what happened to the graphic novels. And he says, basically, in no particular order, our editor left DC, the Vertigo imprint shut down, DC's parent company merged with AT&T. There were multiple reorganizations. Mark Doyle departed. Like, it's just Oh, it's just a miracle this book ever comes out, and I'm happy it does. Even if I didn't love the issue, I'm just happy it's here.
Yes, 100%. And what's interesting, like, it's got to be harder for them to do this now. I mean, when they were working for Vertigo, they were getting paid for the first time ever, you know, regularly. Right. They're still doing it.
Right.
They must love this. That's what makes it great. Like, they just love doing it. Mm-hmm. There's no other reason to do it. There's no way the sales aren't going up, you know.
Right.
They're compelled to keep doing these things. And also, this is all the original team.
Right.
If these people were 30 when this started, they're in their 60s now. The only difference is, like, it's a different comic craft letterer than they normally got. Because they don't usually use the actual names. They just say comic craft lettered it, but that would be Starkings, and Starkings has got to be 70 by now, you know. But Brent Anderson, who's added Eric to his name, was like, it's too late for you to change your pen name.
Don't do that.
And then Alex Sinclair on colors, like, it's just, you know, steady as the rain.
Yeah. And even if it wasn't a great issue, I didn't dislike it. I was like, okay, that was fine.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it was, but it wasn't, like, I kind of was like, maybe this could be a pick of the week one. I was excited that I was going to, like, get a great thing, and it was fine. It wasn't, you know, and compared to their highest highs, you know, that's not good.
The Amazing Spider-Man 894 is the final issue of the Beyond story, and as it turns out, this Beyond story has been Ben Reilly's supervillain origin. That's what this whole thing has been. And I liked it. I did like it. My misgivings were heavy in the beginning because I don't like Ben Reilly. I think it's a mistake to constantly go back to the storyline that almost destroyed Spider-Man. But they found a thing to do with him, and they said it again at the essay in the back that, you know, you had Peter Parker and you had Miles Morales, and those characters weren't going anywhere. So what do you do with Ben Reilly? He can't be a third Spider-Man. There can't be three Spider-Men. So they decided to make him a villain called Chasm. And it makes sense as a supervillain origin.
It does.
Now that you see it all together. So, why not?
Yeah, I can't say it made me terribly interested in one. It absolutely makes sense on paper. Like, well, that's a great idea. Turn this guy into a supervillain. Dumb name. Just, I was iffy on the entire thing. You know, I'd enjoy moments of it. I read the whole thing. That's got to say something. I wouldn't jump off. But right now, like, I was looking at this script and I went, I have no idea what happened in this issue. Like, I kind of blocked it out. I looked through it and I remembered, you know.
So basically, you know, we started the story off where Peter was hurt, and so Ben took over as Spider-Man, but he was backed by this Beyond Corporation. They gave him money, and they gave him a high-tech suit and all kinds of crazy stuff. And as the issue went along, this was a long story. This went on for a long time. You know, the layers were peeled back of this corporation, and they turned out, you know, they were, of course, evil. And a few issues ago, in order to protect themselves, they went into Ben Reilly's head and removed a bunch of his memories. So he has, like, all these giant blocks in his memories.
Chasms.
They basically told him the only way to get those back is you got to go into Peter Parker's brain, because Ben Reilly's a clone of Peter Parker, because they're Peter's memories too. And Peter's like, yeah, no, that's not going to happen. You're not going to take my memories. I'm saying this very quickly. It's happening over a couple of issues, but that's the impetus. The fact that he's going insane because he's missing memories, Peter won't give up his memories to help him. And so now that is his supervillain origin story, as the kids say.
I feel like I missed it, but what's the deal with the costume and the squishy mask?
You mean when you see his faces that are missing?
Yeah, I get that, but, like, where's the costume come from? Is that it? He puts it over his head and it squishes and.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know where that came from.
Okay.
I don't know where the suit came from.
Because usually they'll set up, you know, sort of where the thing came from, and this feels like it's from out of. I can't remember a green and purple.
Yeah, I don't know.
Whatever. Hey, you know what he is? It's better than Carnage.
I'm sure it's something from Beyond. I may have missed where the suit came from, but.
They had their big door, the big thing that they keep everything in.
Yeah. Probably some of their technology. Anyway. I thought, you know, fine. It was fine. I had fun reading this whole thing through, and it featured great creative teams, terrific Arthur Adams covers for the entire run. So Ben Reilly's a bad guy now. There's no more three Spider-Mens. There's only two Spider-Mens.
I don't know what I expect from Spider-Man. I know that I tend to like it when things start, and the Nick Spencer stuff, the beginning of it was great, and then it got into all that, I can't even remember the villain now. All that's, you know, by the end, I was completely like, off of it. Like, I'm not enjoying
everyone
this.
Agrees that run went off the rails.
Yeah, but the basics of it, like, we're all leading to a place that wasn't super interesting with the guy who was convincing everybody to revolt and take over, and I don't know, it didn't work.
I don't remember any of that stuff. Was it Sin Eater?
Sin Eater. There you go.
Yeah, that's it. That's right. Now suddenly I remember it. Yeah, it was fine.
The centipede Harry Osborn guy.
Right. Oh, right. That was bad. Now we'll have another volume starting next month with Zeb Wells, who is a longtime Spider-Man writer, terrific Spider-Man writer.
True.
And we'll see how it goes.
I just remember the last time I really loved it was Joe Kelly, you know, just sort of doing fun, that great Rhino issue, and, and maybe huge arcs aren't the way to go. I wanted to catch up on Usagi Yojimbo. I hadn't talked about it in a while, and if you had been listening to me talk about it before, you know, it's been one of my favorite series. It's just one of those, like, great little things that happens in comics every couple of weeks, and because I think there's two of them going on, and this mini-series, they've stopped doing them in, like, a long single series, and now they're all sort of little...
minis?
Mini-series. So this one's Lone Goat and Kid. And I've actually lost track of... because there's new ones coming out, and there's classic ones being recolored.
Right.
And I kind of lose track of which one's which. You can kind of tell by the art. And this one, like, there's a... whatever I try to talk about, it's all kind of the same story over and over again. He's wandering around. There's some ruffians. Some weird shit goes down. It did seem to be, like, it used to be a lot more supernatural. And there were more animals. Like, now there are animals, but it doesn't really matter what they are. But back then, the animals, like, there's bat ninjas in this. Like, they're ninjas, but they're bats, so they fly around. Because it's like, why are these ninjas flying? You know, and then there's, like, the big bad guy is a snake. And he's, you know, he's dressed like the Cobra Kai outfit, but he has no arms. Which is great, because he has his outfit clearly has shoulder pads, but he has no arms. It doesn't make any sense.
Right.
It is the silliest, most fun thing. I love the little crew of people that he always ends up with. There's always somebody to react to, and Usagi used to be cool against it. I did sort of notice, like, I was like, this art's a little rougher than it is now. Like, he got a lot better. Mm. It's still enjoyable. But I kind of wish, like, there was annotations a little more, like, when did this come out? I don't even know how long it's been. Was it the early 80s? Was it the late? I don't know when it was. But it doesn't say it. If you look in the Indicia, which is you know, the people who've been reading comics forever used to always have to look in the Indicia. I don't do it anymore, but it would tell you, like, first printing, when it was the volume.
So this is not a new story?
It isn't, but it took me a while to figure that out. Featuring classic Usagi Yojimbo stories with brand new color.
I see.
But so it isn't, like, it's a little, that's a little tiny thing. I had to look for it. I was like, is this the new one or the old one? Whatever. Someone's printing them. I don't know how IDW works that out, but I'm glad they do.
They tricked you into thinking it's a new story.
It doesn't bother, because it's new to me. So
sure.
It's not like, it's fine. We also had the final issue of Spider-Woman, issue 116, which marks the end of this sort of long Carla Pacheco Pere Perez story. I think the last issue was Pick of the Week. And... This sort of suffered the same thing as Dark Ages. A ton of stuff happened, and then it was over sort of really quick.
That feels like you're canceling the book, so you better wrap up your story.
But, you know, in this day and age, 21 issues, that's pretty damn good. And also, I just, like, from an art and wacky action standpoint, like, every page is full on. You know, they really went for tons of characters, tons of action. You know, Jessica is really, really consistent. She's got a whole new, you know, from the end of Dennis Hopeless's stuff, she's the whole new cast of characters around her. They got rid of Roger, you know, now it's like there's her niece and Carol, and it's all very family oriented. Her brother is evil, and it really is quite a work, you know, the whole thing. But, you know, if you were to open this issue and just sort of flip through the pages, every one of them is some big, crazy, wacky, funny stuff. And like, you can tell they didn't give a shit about what anybody thought at this point. And I mean that in a good way. But, like, there's bits where the asterisks down here where, like, the character will make a joke and then the editor's note is, what the heck does this mean? And then the writer is justifying the joke in the thing. It's very postmodern in that way. But in a very sort of loose, fun way. Like, they're just like, whatever. Clearly no one's reading this anymore. Let's have the most fun we can with it. And it's really hard not to respect that.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, you know, great series. I'm sad to see them go. I could have read another 30 issues of this easily.
I took a flyer on Immortal X-Men number one from Kieran Gillen, Lucas Wernick, David Curiel, Clayton Cowles. And I wasn't going to at first, only because I've sort of fallen off most of the X-Men books. And I love Kieran, but sometimes I can find his stories hard to follow. But I figured, you know what?
If he has too many characters, you're in trouble.
Yeah, I thought, you know what, I said recently, either on this show or the Hangout somewhere where I talk about comic books, that with X-Men, I'm only really interested in the life on Krakoa, Sex Island, and the political machinations. And this book seems to be all about the political machinations, so I took a flyer on it, and I really enjoyed it. It's all about the Quiet Council, which is the ruling group of the X-Men.
The Illuminati.
Yeah, and here Magneto quits, so they have to figure out who's going to take his place, and you know, so it's all a bunch of, you know, political wrangling. But it's most notable for the fact that it is revealed here that Jesus Christ was a mutant. So I don't know if that...
That sounds like Kieran Gillen.
...changes your interpretation of the Bible. Or I don't know if the church has commented yet or what, but...
Tell you, kind of tracks.
So
does he was resurrected.
He performed
Shows
miracles.
Up at Fuck Island.
Yeah.
Wine for everyone.
Anyway, this was fun. I didn't love it, but it was fun. Batman Beyond, The White Knight, Book One. This is Sean Murphy's latest. He's created this whole universe, this Elseworlds universe, this alternate take on Batman.
Yeah, it's true.
This is like his fourth miniseries. He's actually back to drawing this one. So he wrote and drew this issue. The last mini was drawn by Matteo Scalera.
Wow.
All of these minis have been beautiful. Huh. It seemed like this whole thing came out of like... Batman with muscle cars, and then he just sort of grew into this whole interesting alternate take on Batman. And this one, as perhaps evidenced by the title, is time jumps into the future, and now we add Batman Beyond into the mix with Terry McGinnis, who shows up and steals the futuristic bat suit that people know from the cartoons, although I never watched it, so I don't know much about it. But he's not being run by old Bruce Wayne as he was in the cartoons, he's being run by somebody else. But the difference here, the big difference is A, Jason Todd was the first Robin, as revealed in this issue. He was the first Robin who Bruce Wayne screwed up and then figured out how to do it better with Dick Grayson. So that was a big twist. And then Bruce may have had a kid with Harley Quinn. There's just this really interesting take on Batman that's been beautifully drawn and apparently really popular from what I've been told at DC. So that's why there's been like four miniseries.
Yeah.
I think it's a lot of fun.
It's interesting. I dropped off at some point just because I wasn't. But it's interesting that a lot of these Elseworlds stories are constantly trying to draw parallels. So you have this other thing, oh, there's a completely different setup, and then they draw parallels, so that it makes it kind of the same thing as what's going on in the other books. And it sounds like with this, his deal is to be like, none of those stories matter. We're going to take bits of them, but we can put them in any order we want, and that must keep it relatively exciting.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, it's not unfamiliar, you know, but it's also different. It really did seem like in the beginning it was like an excuse for Sean Murphy to draw like all the Batmobiles doing cool car shit. And he draws really great cars because there was a whole like GCPD task force that was created with all the Batmobiles. So like it was a bunch of, you know, muscle cars run around Gotham City, and that just seemed to be the excuse for that. But out of that basic idea came this whole world that he's created with Batman, Joker, Harley Quinn being sort of at the center of it. It's been interesting, and I was excited to see a new issue of it, and I was excited to see Sean Murphy was drawing it. And, you know, even though I don't know much about Batman Beyond, I'm looking forward to this take.
Can I ask you this? Yep. The other one that came out this week, because now if you did covers for Batman, you get a whole series from now on, is a Jock one.
Yeah.
And I downloaded the issue, and then I realized I hadn't read the first one, and I kind of thought, I kind of don't care. Like, I would look at it, but, like, are you reading that one, too?
I did read that one, good? Well, the problem with that one is they come out every 3 months.
Okay.
So
yes, that's why I didn't read it, because it came out during like the Christmas break or thanks one of the weeks I wasn't there.
It was during
just
break.
Sat there for a long time.
Yeah. Batman One Dark Knight is the book, and I was so lost reading this issue only because again, I was like, wait, what happened 3 months ago? A lot in the world.
Yeah,
just do an OGN with Jock. People will buy it. I'll buy it. Do an OGN. I get the economics of comics. They want to loss lead the collection, but still, like. I had no idea what was happening because 3 months ago might have been a different world for all I know. And then the next issue comes out in June.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. But also just at the same time, there's so many alternate Batmans happening at any given point. And they all
there was another one. There was
one Dark Knight, White Knight. There's the Chip Zdarsky one. There's the Tom Taylor. Like it's all, there's so many.
And there was another one too that I was reading. I don't remember who was doing it, but there was like four or five at the same time. And I get it. He's the bread and butter, but this one is like the Warriors plus like those stories where the cops got to get the witness across town, but everyone's trying to kill the witness kind of story.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically the story that one is. Batman's got to get this guy across town, and an EMP has gone off, and Gotham is dark, so it's one dark night.
I see.
Batman's tech doesn't work. He's got to like run this guy across town while everyone's trying to kill him.
I went and I looked at it, and I was like, wait, how did they spell night? Because that was going to tell me more about the story. And I was like, oh, it's a K. But what you just said sounded like it should have been with an N.
Yeah.
But what do we know?
So I'm really curious because I don't think we've talked much about this book.
We haven't.
We talked about it in the beginning when it first launched. But this is a Hulk show, so why not? Hulk 772.
Donny Cates and Ryan Ottley with Cliff Rathburn and Frank Martin on colors and the Indomitable. And we're going to be seeing Corey Pettit's name for another 30 years if we keep doing this. I've had a hard time with this series. I think it looks awesome and it is super energetic and moving, but I don't really understand it, and I kind of don't care.
It should be a slam dunk. When they announced Donny Cates and Ryan Otley, I was like, oh, shit, that's going to be awesome. And yep. I don't know what the fuck is going on with this book.
Well, I also think that it is unfortunate that this is coming out at the same time as the Maestro books, because that is a straightforward story that I am following and loving.
Yeah.
And so then I come over to this one, and you're right, it should be a complete... And it looks amazing.
I love Donny Cates, but I'm reading this book for the art right now, because the story of the Hulk as a spaceship with Bruce Banner in his head piloting it, and there's another Hulk who's raging inside him, and he's the engine room, and now there's alternate dimension Hulks, and alternate dimension Thunderbolt Rosses, and alternate dimension Betty Rosses, and I read this issue, and I finished it, and I was like, I don't know what happened. There's a lot, and I don't follow
it. I don't even understand from time, like, the physics of how big everything is confuse me. Like, it's like, it reminds me of the Transformers cartoon. Like, you had to just accept that the size of these things doesn't matter. It's going to change constantly. And I feel like that's what's happening here. Yeah, I was about to try to summarize what it, but I can't do it. And so from moment to moment, I'm kind of confused. Like, I can tell when they're in the cockpit with Banner, and then there's the Hulk with the head visor thing, and he's a rocket. But yeah, it's
the Hulk with the head visor, I think, is the... Like, I don't know, which one's the real Hulk? I guess it's the one at the head visor, but I don't know.
Yeah, it's very confusing. Like, having just read, you know, the Grand Design book, the concept is so far from where it started. And Banner is the thing that's really, he's so different from, you know, I think the movies actually did, the movies have done Banner and Hulk better than any of the comics.
I don't like asshole Banner.
No, I think that's the thing. It's hard to... I can deal with asshole Pym, and I can deal with other versions of it, but, like, I think you have to have... Well...
I like tragic Banner. I mean, like, it's all matter of taste, but I just... I don't know.
But we haven't had a good handle on who Banner is for years, because everybody comes in and they want to do their stamp on it, and you need something to ground you, and I think that we don't have any... Like, do whatever you want with the Hulk, but Banner has to be the guy who you understand. But then again, from a narrative standpoint, like, it's always like there's the monster and the heart, and then, but what if they're not? What if the monster isn't really the monster and the other one is? I get it, but I don't have any ground under my feet.
It's tough. It's tough. Yeah. I want to love this book, and I don't.
I do too.
Hey, those are the books we want to talk about. There's not a lot of books, but we talked about a lot of them. But if you go to patreon.com/ifanboy, every patron of the show gets to add a book to the rundown. They vote on it, and they picked this week Hulk Grand Design Monster Number 1 was the patron pick, which is also the pick of the week. So we'll do ratings and ratings on Hulk Grand Design Monster Number 1 from Jim Rugg. Ratings out of 5.
I want to be between 4.25 and 4.5. And this is a rating of what it is, not compared to all other comic books that are great.
So I was thinking 4.25 when I was reading the copy here. So perhaps 4.25.
Yeah, that's fine. That works.
Now, here's the complicated question for me. Are you sticking with it?
Is it going to keep going?
Yes.
Yeah.
So here's my problem.
I'm listening.
I have never read the Peter David run. It's one of my great comic book holes that I would like to fill someday.
Oh,
I don't necessarily want to get spoiled.
Well, how likely is it you think that you would actually read that?
I would like to. I would really like to sometime in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure, because I really love these Grand Design books, but I just don't know if I want to be spoiled. Although I know a lot of what happens in the books just from osmosis of being a comic reader. Plus, you know, when it was coming out, one of my best friends was a Peter David Hulk fan, and so he would tell me about what was going on. So I remember I have some idea. I'm on the fence. I'm not sure. Only because I just don't want to be spoiled by it.
I think I can read it pretty safely.
Yeah.
I think that I won't remember the details, and I will also probably never actually read those issues, if I'm being realistic.
The good stuff is the nuance and the details, and that's not what this book's about. So it's probably okay. I haven't decided. I'll decide in the moment. I probably will read it, but it's something I thought about, you know, at the time when I finished the issue.
I think I will get more value out of reading the story this way that will add to the way that I enjoy comics.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, I'm going to read it. It's good. All good right. question, though. That's excellent. So
we're sticking with it, probably, and yep. we enjoyed it. So there you go. Patreon.com/iFanboy. You can vote to add a book to the rundown. Okay, so if you are a patron, as we mentioned, but you give it the $5 or higher level, you get a superpower live on the show. It's the patron power segment of the show. Let's do it.
Matt Pfaff.
Pfaff.
I work with a Pfaff, spelled the same way. P-F-A-F-F.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy that aesthetically. I enjoy saying it. I like that there's a silent P. Mm-hmm. Silent P is my favorite silent letter. Matt Pfaff has the Gore-Tex touch. Like King Midas, who turns everything to gold, everything that Matt touches develops a waterproof, breathable, and permeable membrane that keeps you dry.
Wow.
And also allows you to stay cool.
But even things that don't necessarily shouldn't be Gore-Tex.
It's controllable. He's not necessarily like, we're going to say, it's not King Midas in the sense like he can't touch anything and therefore ruin the world.
He just can Gore-Tex things.
He can Gore-Tex things.
Should he choose to do so.
Should he choose to do so. And it's important to remember, a lot of people confuse Gore-Tex with insulating properties, of which it has none. It is really about moisture and wind transfer. You know, and there's higher expensive levels of Gore-Tex and cheaper ones. The cheaper ones are going to be heavier. They're going to be crinklier. They're not going to necessarily have as much breathability. But he's going to put the best possible thing. So, like, say that you have a pair of sneakers, and, you know, you don't want to wear them in the rain.
Right.
But, you know, you don't necessarily want to have to buy special shoes for it. He'll Gore-Tex those guys up for you.
But does the appearance of the shoe change?
Not necessarily.
Doesn't something look like Gore-Tex shoes?
No. It's an interior lining.
I see.
Realistically, in practice, it feels a little different on the inside, but you get used to it. It's a very useful product. I'm sure it's contributing all the PFAS in our waters or something like that. I don't really know, but...
Everything's terrible. The Zoles.
That's a circus family, right?
The Zoles are a circus family, which is good. Their power could come in handy.
Wait, is an indie band our patron? Is that what's happening here?
Unlike certain people who have been talked about in the show, when the Zoles get angry, they get smaller and weaker.
Oh, well, to be fair, I think that's literally what happens.
So they shrink, they punch and nothing. So if one of the Zoles were to come home and find another Zole is like 3 inches high, you're like, oh man, what happened? And so then as they get calmed down, they start to return to their normal size and strength.
It's funny because when you said one of the Zoles comes home and finds another Zole, and I was like, in flagrante delicto? Like, and they would get so mad that they would get very, very tiny.
They're anti-Hulks.
Well, I mean, I think as we have seen in popular culture, you really do want to maintain control of your anger.
Right.
In your outbursts. And in my own personal life, I have found that that is a difficult thing to do. But when you do, you're a much happier person.
Plus, when they're all to get angry at. Just angry and tiny and squeaky voiced, it's funny.
I mean, again, watching a real person get very, very angry about something, especially something innocuous, makes them appear very, very, very tiny and silly.
Right.
So this actually happens to them. As a result, they probably try to stay normal size a lot of the time, and they keep their cool and they're pleasant to be around.
Right.
Also, additionally, if you get really angry and then it makes you tiny and have a squeaky voice, if you're a good folk, you're going to recognize that's very funny.
Yes.
It's very funny when I get angry. Like, so that will help diffuse the anger also. Because you'll be like, I can't believe I got cut off again in traffic.
Exactly.
This is ridiculous.
Yep. So there you go. This is Zoles and Matt. Thanks for being patrons. Patreon.com/iFanboy. And that's one way you can help support the show. Patreon.com/iFanboy is the main way, but also iFanboy.threadless.com is our t-shirt store. iFanboy.com/support is our digital tip jar. iFanboy.com/Amazon is where you can find links to buy books and other things. Those are all the ways to help support the show. Keep it going. Pay the bills. Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
There you go. Shall we do some email? We have time.
You should do at least one, depending on how long we babble on.
I'm going to do the middle one. Middle one to start, short one. Justin asks, when you were running the website, what comic stories or runs of that period got the most attentions and clicks from your site's visitors? I want to adapt this a little because he's asking about issues and stories and things like that, which is fair, but I think the types of content that got attention were interesting and surprising.
I think this is a great question, first of all, but also yes. It's great that you picked it because it's now been almost 10 years since we stopped doing the website full time. Do you realize that? It's been 9 years.
In fact, it makes me wonder, and I thought you were going to explain to people who are listening who have started in the last 10 years.
Yes, exactly. That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
So for 13 years, iFanboy was not just a podcast or a suite of podcasts. It was a whole ecosystem. It started as a website because there were no podcasts when we started in 2000. And for 13 years, we ran iFanboy.com as a daily website of content. At one point, we had like 15 writers. You know, we had tons of daily content. The Pick of the Week used to be a written review first, and then it was a podcast, and it was both. And so people who've come along in the last 9 years may not realize that. And we plug at the end of the show every episode, but people probably don't go. But like, first of all, it was Josh and I's full-time job for 5 years? 4 years? Yeah. To run the website and the podcast and everything.
8 to 13.
Yeah, so 5 years. We did iFanboy full-time. It was a whole thing. 7 podcasts a week. 9 or 10 articles a day. It was a whole thing. So if you came around in the last 9 years, you're in the podcast era, but there was a whole other era where we ate, slept, and breathed comic book stuff
because we were writing about everything.
So when we were doing that, you take what you were going to say, and I'll take what I was going to say. So why don't you answer what you think you were going to say?
What I thought was always very surprising, sometimes not. I don't know that we had virality. Viral things like in the same sense that we do now where something goes, but
because there wasn't really a mechanism for it, really.
No, well, I mean, like if Twitter started in 2007, it's kind of, it just wasn't working that way quite yet. We were and also we were very focused on, we weren't trying to be clickbait. We were trying to make it easy enough for people to find us, but not like just get somebody to click on it and move along. We were really trying to put
thoughtful
heart and thoughtfulness into it, and you know, the same thing that we, the way that we try to talk about comics. Anyway, I think the most,
which doesn't say we didn't try to get popular stuff. Anyway, go ahead.
No, but we tried to do it in our way. We didn't just do it like that. Wasn't the only goal. We wanted it to be good, whatever it was. I think the most popular story that we ever did, like the most, was about the cops.
Yes,
the 2 DC cops.
I'm actually googling it right now. This was fairly late in the run of the website. It was Scott Snyder uncovers bizarre background character mystery. In which Scott Snyder had posted on Twitter that he had realized that the same 2 cops were in the background of all these different comics, like the same 2 drawn cops. One had like a soul patch and one, like they were the same 2 guys.
And like across comics and in kids books and just everything.
DC stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
DC kids books and regular comics and other stuff. So that was our most popular article by far. Like that one blew up virally.
Uh-huh.
And it was just us compiling all of Scott's stuff together and then writing about ourselves. But and I think it blew up virally, not in America, though.
Oh.
If I recall correctly, it was like it blew up in Asia.
No shit.
But it was like by far our biggest thing in terms of
now
views.
After that, I would say that pretty much anything that had to do with movies or TV, and that was during the more nascent stage, like that was always the most popular stuff. It also generated the most activity and comments and things like that.
Yeah, it's a bummer. Anytime we covered anything to do with indie comics, which we love to do, it was basically for ourselves. I mean, the amount of people who clicked on those indie comics articles would fit in a bus.
You know, all day, still. We're still deluged all day, every day, many times, by people with indie projects who are like, can you help cover me? And back then, we were like, well, first of all, we didn't have time.
Mm-hmm.
And second of all, if we did, no one would have looked. Like, it's like that was really like, if you've ever written to us about your indie project, we didn't do anything for you, not because we're awful, but literally it would have been a waste of everybody's time. They would not have looked. They don't, written interviews of any kind, even with huge names, got
didn't
nothing.
Do anything. Yeah.
Nothing ever, which was really surprising to me because that was like the bread and butter, I thought, of the industry was those things. And so sometimes I'd ask for it to do a talk split and they'd be like, well, can we just do a written one? I was like, it's no point. There's no point. We're all just going
to
waste our time.
It wouldn't be worth the time it would take for me to transcribe it.
Yeah.
You know, like Jeff said, if we posted an article that was like, is Chris Evans playing Captain America, that would dwarf every other article about actual comics on the website. And, you know, that's just the way.
Yeah.
Tom Caters, who was a columnist and an occasional podcast guest, would joke that, you know, movie stills.
Yeah.
It was, if you posted a movie still, tons of traffic. If you posted, you know, something about some all-time great indie comics creator, you know, hard crickets. That's just how it went. So, but if you're talking about comics and runs from that period, you know, that sort of golden age of Secret Invasion and Final Crisis was sort of the you know, the in terms of comic book interest and traffic, that was always the high point. Major events before they burned themselves out. I think that's probably the last gasp of major events, those two. Yeah. Whenever those books came out, those were really popular. We had the pull list. Those always get the most pulls and the most reviews. And
then people like commenting and talking under the... I mean, there's no commenting anymore, really, in the way that there used to be, where like discussions. I mean, it's always what we wanted. We wanted cool discussions and people, you know, and then the best of those people we ended up... And I mean the best of the most interesting and the well-spoken of the folks, you know, we hired a lot of them to write for us. That's where that came from. And that was always the stuff that we enjoyed the most, but... You know, that was the golden age of the movies and the TVs. Basically, 2008 is when Iron Man came out, and it's when we sort of started doing that stuff. And that's what people were ravenous about. And I always think about that. A, more people are just going to watch that than are ever going to read a comic book. But B, I think it still exists. There was some sort of search for legitimacy that we have and should let go for the material, but not necessarily the comics. You know, where people wanted, they just, like, if they make this thing that they like into something that everybody gets to see and like, then that justifies and validates what they thought about it. I don't know. I've tried to think about it for a long time because I'm interested in it, but I'm interested in the comics more. And I'm not, obviously, that's not a mainstream thought. Like, I kind of don't care. And now there's been so many movies and shows that it's just like, it's not even special anymore. But
yeah.
Still.
It's the Final Crisis and Secret Invasion both came out 2008, 2009. So that would be, those 2 years were the first 2 years we were doing it full time. And I would think in terms of pure interest, those were hugely popular. So was Grant Morrison's Batman run.
Yeah.
For good and for bad, people like to go on there and disparage it as much as enjoy it. So like that was like the end of Bendis's New Avengers. Like, that was a great time of comics, and that was a lot of comics that people were interested in back then. But I would say if I think back on, you know, the most popular in terms of people discussing and debating and arguing about it, be Final Crisis and Secret Invasion coming out at the same time. That's what I would say.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Good question, Justin.
It was a good question. It's interesting to go back and think about it and that it's been that long.
Yeah.
And also, I think economics and strategies of the web are so different now. I mean, I can't even... Like, I would never... I still wouldn't, but like... The thing where you write something in the headline that tells you nothing about it, you know, but it claims to have an answer inside, you know, that's what you would have to do now. And I wouldn't.
We did almost everything backwards and wrong. And our whole thing was we wanted to make thoughtful, interesting content. And that is just not what the internet maw requires. It requires clickbait headlines and hot takes.
Yep.
That was just not what we did.
And that's why we have day jobs.
That's why we're back working their minds. Although we have people who are really good at, like, Jimsky still, I think, is one of the best pure columnists I've ever seen. And he just happened to be doing it for comics. And I would not call him a hot take writer, but he was a columnist in that he had a point of view and it inspired lots of passionate response.
I think, yeah, that's...
But in a very thoughtful and interesting and smart way. Not
I don't think he got
all.
The most page views, although I don't think it was bad, but he did get the most engagement with
yes.
the people talking. Like, he'd have...
The highest engagement,
you know,
for sure.
100, you know, he'd have 100 comments. When I did those... What's wrong with you columns, which were combative, you know, like I'd get a shit ton of comments,
yeah.
but I don't like conflict. And mm-hmm. so I got very stressed out about doing it. I didn't think I was wrong and I wasn't making things up, but I was just like, I'm not doing any good putting this out there. And it's stressing me out that I have
Josh's
to
Josh's
like,
airing of grievances that you did in the final year of a handboy. Yeah.
I wrote one that I never put up.
Yeah.
You're like, you shouldn't publish that. And I was like, yeah, you're right.
It wasn't.
No,
I know. It wasn't good.
You know what it reminded me of? This is an aside. So this is a candy shop in town. And it was cool. You know, you'd go in there and it was kind of expensive. And, you know, they had like fancy fudge and all sorts of stuff. And it was really good. And it closed because they didn't sell enough. And there was this note that the owner left on the door about how it was everybody's in the town's fault. They didn't buy enough candy from them. And I was like, how much fucking candy do you expect people to buy? Like, it's not. And it was like, you're not supporting local business. I was like, we're not ordering candy from Amazon. Just, I can't buy this much candy. Like, I went in there like once a week. I bought some stuff, but.
We have an obesity crisis.
I'm not going to get a bin of it. Yeah. And then, so what they did was in the last like 6 months, they decided to put in an ice cream stand.
Uh-huh.
And it should be noted that my town is replete with, like, there is so many ice cream stands.
New England's all about ice cream.
Right. And like also, so their ice cream is really expensive. It's like $7-8 a cone, and it, there's nowhere to sit. It's in a like a strip mall with a parking lot. Uh-huh. And like they blamed, and it was the angriest thing. And I was like, and also that place was great. But it's just that, anyways, that's what that column would have been like. I don't even remember, oh, I don't remember what it was. The title was What's Wrong With You, colon, you.
You in a dark spot.
Actually, it literally was.
It's still in the system, you know. I can hit publish on it at any moment.
Can you just find it and delete it and don't tell me what's in it? I'm fine with that. Let's end it. Let's be done.
All right. Thanks for writing in. We had other emails in this, but honestly, every time we have a short week, we're like, we're going to get so many emails in, and then we just blabber on like gibbering idiots. Contact@ifanboy.com is where Justin wrote in, and as well as other people. Thanks for writing in emails. If you want to write in for the Media Splode Show, please put it in the subject line. Thank you very much. Since mid-February, we've had a show every week come out.
Extra show.
So we had, in the last month or so, we had the Book Splode on New Teen Titans, the Judas Contract. We had the Batman review, Catwoman Hunted review, our Media Splode pre-Oscar show. And boy, did we not see what was coming. And we had a Talk Splode that just came out this past week, right behind the show. Josh interviewed Daniel Warren Johnson, one of our favorite new people in comics.
Great dude. Just great dude. That's what I came out of it. And it's like, I didn't know a thing about him. And I hate that. I hate because they have no context. You don't know what thing to be like. You don't know. Apparently, he's quite available on the web, so you could have seen. But like right away, he's just super cool, talented, you know, humble, thoughtful dude. Really enjoyed it.
With a studio quality microphone.
You should listen to it. Oh, he had the same one you do. It's the Shure SM7, I think.
Every creator should get one.
Because at one point, I was like, you sound amazing. He was like, oh, yeah, I have all this. And I was like, oh, God bless you. Usually I just like, do you have headphones? That's my product. Like, I don't ask anything of it. I was just like, please just use headphones. You can find all those shows. That was Talk Splode number 101, but you can find all the rest of them at ifanboy.com. You can search Jimsky's name and look at some of those. You can search What's Wrong With You, and you can see that. I stand by most of
them. Read the comments section of those What's Wrong With You articles. It just was a really fucking easy nightmare. On all sides. Really, no one comes off well in any of that.
You know what? No, I do. Pirated comics were the other thing. Like, if you talked about pirated comics, the justifications free-flowing every time. It's okay to steal this stuff. And we still never justified it. And, you know, like many of the things you say are true. Doesn't matter, though. That stuff's all there. Look at comics piracy or whatever. Like, it's probably a rabbit hole. And then maybe you will find something that we've said that doesn't hold up, in which case, I want to know. You can find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out by following us on Twitter, which is @iFanboy or @iFanboyComics on Instagram. You can follow us individually. We are C.S. Kilpatrick and J.A. Flanagan, both on Instagram. You can subscribe to YouTube page, youtube.com/iFanboy. You can keep up to date with old video show re-uploads. All the full-length shows are there, and we're just down to the minis, which were our short daily shows. This past week, Hawkman, the character continuity killed. That is a Connor one, if I've ever seen one. Mm-hmm. Not wrong. Not wrong.
Yep.
Pick of the week, Fear Agent number 23. I'm going to assume that's me.
Yep, that's you.
But it could have been, yeah.
Could have been any of us, but that was you.
That was awesome.
Yeah, that was a great series.
Yeah, that one was me. I think, I'm not sure, but I believe the review that I wrote for Fear Agent 23 was printed its entirety in Fear Agent number 27.
Really?
Which is a little self-serving, but yeah, that would make sense.
Did we authorize that?
I remember I had
that?
A whole pick of the week review. I don't know. I don't care. You immediately go, was that okay? I was like, I thought of, is that okay? Probably.
Yeah, they probably.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's not like we didn't know the guy.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. Oh, this long history of stuff that like has no currency or relevance anymore that we cling to.
Hey, if you like the show, consider writing a review or start leaving a star rating on Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. For any podcast you listen to, it's a great way to help the show and say thanks. We do appreciate that. Even better, that's word of mouth, as people ask about what you're listening to. What are you into these days? We always appreciate when everyone says iFanboy, so thank you very much. And that's it for this week's show. Until next week, I am Connor.
That would make me Josh, and that would make you wonderful people for listening. Take care out there. And good luck. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Stand a This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also like, one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.